Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, July 3rd. Unemployment is spreading because of a virus. My next guest says unemployment can spread like a virus, and she's got a solution, a federal jobs guarantee. Many economists consider unemployment natural, unavoidable, even necessary to a certain degree for the economy to function. But Pavlina Chernova, who specializes in what's known as modern monetary theory, disagrees. The virus theory, well, as economic downturns cause layoffs, the recently unemployed have less money to spend, leading to a second wave of unemployment in the industries they can no longer support. But what if the government could guarantee a living wage job to any American who wants one? It's an economic policy idea that some of you may know has gained traction, not only as coronavirus unemployment has spread, but from well-known progressive political figures recently before this. Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Cory Booker have backed versions of this idea, or at least believe it should be considered as a response to income inequality in America generally and to automation and to other things that cause structural unemployment. It's part of the Green New Deal, the federal jobs guarantee. So joining us now is Bard College economics professor Pavlina Chernova, who's got a new book called The Case for a Job Guarantee. Professor Chernova, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Good morning.
And let's start in the present, because you wrote this book before the pandemic, when official unemployment was down around 3%. Now comes this historically weird emergency where the economy shuts down voluntarily and tens of millions of people lose their jobs all at once. The government responds with a patchwork of enhanced unemployment benefits and paycheck loans to employers intended to keep a lot of that money passing through to some workers, plus the other kinds of pre-existing government aid like Medicaid and food stamps and more. Would the guaranteed job program replace all of that under current circumstances?
No, it will not replace any other measures that might be considered necessary, but it is the most straightforward solution to providing jobs for people who need it. I mean, in the current crisis, we should have focused on protecting jobs and preventing the layoffs. That would have made the task of dealing with this avalanche of layoffs much easier. I think we can look to some countries in Europe who have used, again, the public purse, government budgets, to essentially guarantee the payroll for folks whose jobs were threatened from COVID. So unemployment rates did spike in some of those countries, but not nearly as much as they did in the United States. So, and the budget that we passed, the CARES Act, was so large, it was enough to pay the entire wage bill in the U.S. economy for three straight months. So we could have protected jobs, we could have prevented layoffs, but the damage is done. And unemployment, as I argue in the book, is kind of a perennial feature in the economy. So the way to inoculate against that is just to create jobs directly.
How much would the living wage be in a guaranteed federal jobs program?
I mean, the proposal in my book is for $15 an hour, and that is really to help with the fight for 15 that has captured the interest in policymakers at the state level, but it might be that 15 will not be enough sooner, you know, very very recently. So in a short order rather. So maybe 17, but this is a policy. This is a policy question. The point here is to ensure that it's a living wage floor and that no person works in a poverty-paying job. So it affirms a living wage for the economy as a whole. The minimum wage, as you know, is $7.25, and it is not a living wage. It's a poverty-paying wage. So it represents about a doubling of the minimum wage
at the federal
and
level.
And that will significantly elevate the floor.
Yes, and that's the federal minimum wage, which might be shocking to some of our listeners, since the minimum wage around here is $15 an hour, but federally, and therefore in some states that don't have the same politics as, say, New York or New Jersey, it's still down around that poverty wage. As you know, other progressives propose what they call a universal basic income rather than a guaranteed job. Andrew Yang, for example, ran for president on a $1,000 a month universal basic income proposal. But I don't believe there is a work requirement, just the money as a universal basic income sent to every American. Do you argue that a guaranteed job solves the same problem, but in a different way?
No, I think the job guarantee solves more problems. So $1,000 a month, while very nice, doesn't really lift people out of poverty. It helps. But the job guarantee guarantees a living wage. And so when a person needs work and they go into the unemployment office, which, by the way, is called the American Job Center, they can find a lot of other assistance, but they can't find a job. And that's what the job guarantee does. It ensures that there's a public service policy, you know, option, employment options for those who need work. And we know from basic income experiments that people who even get the income assistance still are looking for jobs. So the problem that the job guarantee solves is this basically cruel game of musical chairs that people play in the labor market. And they're looking for jobs, but there are not enough employment opportunities for all, even in the best of times. You know, forget about COVID. Even when the economy is humming near full employment, we are still talking about millions and millions who don't have employment. And the unemployment problem is there. It, as you were saying in the introduction, it inflicts a lot of social, health, economic costs. It's paid for, in a sense. And so we can do things better by using the public purse to employ the unemployed. But I want to say that it's not a work requirement. The job guarantee doesn't provide a requirement for the benefits that people might be receiving. It's an additional program. So you could have the choice of getting unemployment insurance and the various other income assistance that is provided out there. But if we gave people one more choice to pick up a living wage job offer, then that provides stronger economic security.
Some of our listeners know, and I mentioned it in the intro, that this gets presented as part of the Green New Deal. It gets knocked on places like Fox News as part of the Green New Deal, where they'll go on and say, wait, what does this have to do with global warming? They want the other taxpayers to fund jobs for every single American who's out of work. What does that have to do with the Green New Deal? And so they see that as excessively socialist in the guise of trying to protect the environment. So what does it have to do with preventing global warming if you agree that this belongs in the package that's known as the Green New Deal?
Yes, absolutely. It was called the most crucial component of the Green New Deal, and it's because of this feature, the safety net feature that the job guarantee has. Now, I think we should distinguish between the two projects or proposals. The Green New Deal really is an industrial strategy. It is a plan that involves all manner of employment, technological know-how to transition the economy from fossil fuels to to a green future. Now, naturally, this has created a lot of anxiety in people. You know, will I lose my job? Will I be guaranteed a good job in this green economy? But the job guarantee, by being part of that package, that industrial strategy, is essentially what guarantees that transition. It basically promises if you lose your employment, then we guarantee a stepping stone, a safety net, employment, living wage safety net, and then help train, retrain, transition back into the green economy. So I think that answers this call for inserting economic justice in the green economy. But to concerns that this is some sort of socialism or that this is some big government takeover, I think the proper comparison is to think of what happens today with unemployment. Just to enumerate all of the social costs and the fact that unemployment is paid for and environmental degradation happens and the costs associated with addressing fires and floods and hurricanes, they're there. I mean, we have to respond. The problem is that our incinerated communities still don't have jobs. They're still not rebuilt. They're still not cleaned up. And so the job guarantee also puts these two problems together. It says, look, we have millions of people who need work. These communities need rebuilding. Let's put the two together. There is a larger public purpose at hand. And let's spend money on, you know, protection, if you will, rather than this neglect that we suffer.
Terry in Queens, you're on WNYC with Pavlina Cherneva. Hello, Terry.
Yes, hello. How are you? I'd just like to say the job protection is at an all-time low. You have people with disabilities, people who never get accommodated for their jobs or accommodated for their with their sickness, and also no due process. And the city wastes so much money on training people and then firing them. And she's right. When you're poor, it's like the richest punishing the poor. When you're poor, you wind up taking transportation to go out further to shop, to buy food, to buy clothing. You're out on the street. You're susceptible to drugs. I mean, to diseases and drugs if you're, you know, I'm just trying to talk fast. But it's punishing the poor. I am a victim of an agency in New York City. Called the mayor, still didn't get any help. And I am tired. I don't know what else to do. And this caused problems throughout the community, through my personal life. Everyone suffers. I'm going to hang up now.
Terry, thank you so much. And call us again. Well, he put a lot on the table there. Anything you want to respond to, Professor?
No, but he's absolutely right. The current model is a cruel model. And, you know, this Vickrey, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, he called it vandalism. And economists then talk about the natural rate of unemployment, which you mentioned in the introduction. And so, you know, we have kind of normalized this notion that somehow people should be struggling and they should be looking for jobs that are not there. And so we're shuffling people along the unemployment line, giving them training and education with the promise of a job that doesn't arrive. The job guarantee ensures that the job is there. And it does something else. I mean, he mentioned people with disabilities. You know, the job guarantee doesn't say everybody has to be working. It is part of a broader safety net, right, that protects people who cannot work. But there are people with disabilities who would like to work, and they cannot fit the private sector criteria, not to mention that current law in the United States permits employers to pay as low as $1 an hour for to people with disabilities. So if we had a public option with a decent wage benefit package that actually creates public service employment and fits it to the people's needs, skills, conditions, with the design jobs with the person in mind, of course, and the kind of community need in mind, you know, we have a better way of doing things and helping people out of this catch-22 that they're constantly experiencing, faced with either unemployment or very poorly paid employment.
How would you pay for it?
The way we pay for everything else. First, it's already paid for, but this is a federally funded program. So as I was mentioning, the costs for neglect are there. We're spending public money to address them. So unemployment is paid for, but it is a federal program, locally administered, because the kind of employment security we're talking about is really one that has to be there, rain or shine, which means if we have mass unemployment as we do with the current crisis, we're looking at 20 million more out of jobs. Only the federal government can spend the money, appropriate the budget to employ the unemployed. Now, states, they have, as you explained in the previous segment, they have very serious limits and constraints where the federal budget is not subject to these constraints. The federal government has these institutions that were created for the very purpose of ensuring that all government bills are paid. Treasury, Federal Reserve, this is what we call monetary sovereignty, the power of the public purse. So
well,
it's a federal program like any
right.
other.
They could print money. I guess that's monetary sovereignty. People worry that would lead to inflation. They could borrow money. That would put us more into debt, which a lot of people worry could come back to haunt eventually and lead to big cuts in Social Security and Medicare, as well as other things, and put a big tax burden on the future generations as more of the tax dollar goes to paying off that debt. So the American taxpayer would have to decide that this is worth it to them, maybe to be taxed more in the present, to employ millions more people, even in normal times, to employ a federal job guarantee, right?
Well, I think it's useful just to take a moment to dispel those myths, that the taxpayer is not on the hook for paying for unemployment. For New York State, New York State funds itself through tax revenue, but the federal government does not depend on tax revenue to fund itself, and it's not about printing money. What I think is important to realize is that even without COVID, the government simply appropriates its budget into existence, and it doesn't first go and collect taxes from some rich, wealthy donors or call China to borrow money from them before it decides that, you know, we have to give a tax cut to the rich or that we have to fight a war. On the contrary, Congress gets together, votes a package, votes programs, the money is appropriated, the Fed and the Treasury coordinate to pay all bills. There's no, like, hidden printing press in the basement, right? They credit bank accounts, and that's how it's paid. The tax revenue is kind of a return of some of this money back into the public sector, but it's not a funding mechanism. So I realize that this is quite a different shift in perspective, but it's important really to understand how the government funds, that it's not robbing our unborn grandchildren, that money is spent, and we see this all the time. You know, how did we appropriate $2.2 trillion overnight to deal with COVID? Again, we didn't call anyone, any taxpayer. It was the public purse and the sovereign monetary institutions that funded this. And the reality is that this happens on an ongoing basis, but typically the expenditures are rather small, so they don't concentrate the mind, and we don't see these extraordinary purchases, which should really kind of debunk this myth that we're dependent on tax revenue.
But then why do we see countries like Greece and Italy a few years ago, to take some recent examples, other countries at other times, get into these debt crises that have severe effects on the populations?
That's a really good question. And not every country has these institutions as we do in the United States. So countries like Greece and Italy, they gave up their monetary sovereignty, which basically meant that they gave up the power to issue their own currency and to control it the way we do with the dollar, the way other countries, UK does with the British pound. But when joining the European Union, Monetary Union, basically countries abdicated their monetary sovereignty, and they are now subject to private banks financing governments on tax revenue. So they have flipped entirely their capacities and constrained them radically. So yes, you can have a debt crisis if you do not control your currency or borrow in a foreign currency.
Jim in the South Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. A couple points. I very much agree with Professor and her statement about the stimulus checks that were sent out earlier this year. And in fact, I'm very angry that I actually got one of those. You know, I still have my job. I still have my regular paycheck. People like me should not have gotten one of those checks. It's just one of the sort of ridiculous policies in this country that, you know, you can just get money for free, and people think that that works. But my other question for the professor has to do exactly with what you were talking about, Brian. My understanding of the Greek fiscal crisis of several years ago is that one of the things driving it was a bloated public sector in which the political parties essentially used the state to hire a lot of people for their political advantages, and that really helped drive that fiscal crisis. And the other thing I wanted to raise, and maybe the professor can help me with this, I think that several years ago, this would have been at least 15 years ago, Brazil tried to establish a sort of guaranteed right to work, and it worked very badly, if I remember correctly. Maybe your professor can clarify that for me. And I'd like any response to any of those issues.
Thank you very much. How about the Brazil example, Professor?
So it's not Brazil. Brazil has not attempted a job guarantee, but in early 2000s, Argentina put in place a very large program that is very similar to the job guarantee that I'm proposing to deal with the crisis. They were faced with about 25% unemployment at the time. People were in the streets asking for jobs. And so the Ministry of Labor put in place this program, very much direct employment, public service, a New Deal, and the effects were overwhelmingly positive. The unemployment rate dropped precipitously as the economy was growing. So there's no such thing as jobless recovery, and that was in the depths of, you know, a very serious recession. The projects that were created were very interesting because they were self-organized, people from the ground up cleaned up their communities, filled up some needs gaps. And the macroeconomic effects were interesting because there was no inflation of note. It was sustained growth for quite a long period of time. And very naturally, kind of the government budget shrank, the deficit shrank just because the economy was growing. People also transitioned out of the program into private sector employment as this program kickstarted the economy. So actually, we have some good examples around the world how the job guarantee would work in practice. And unfortunately, it was phased out because it was just put in place as a crisis policy, much like the New Deal programs. So what I'm suggesting in the book is that jobs are needed, rain or shine, and we need to have this shock absorber for jobs, even when the economy is doing relatively well.
Is the old Soviet Union a cautionary tale against this kind of thing? There was a Soviet era joke that you probably know that went, the people pretend to work and the government pretends to pay them.
So the program would be very different because it is designed for a market economy, right? Most of the jobs are created in the private sector. We know this. But the private sector doesn't create enough for everyone. So this is a supplement. It's a public program where not 100% of people are working for the public sector. It's just the portion of those who have not found employment in the private sector. So the two are in a dance, if you will. You know, the private sector expands, the public sector shrinks. The private sector shrinks, the public option expands. And it is a replacement to unemployment. So currently the shock absorber is unemployment. You know, we watch this yo-yo effect of mass layoffs and then slow jobless recoveries and mass layoffs again and slow jobless recoveries. So the job guarantee actually is a substitute for this yo-yo effect and this stabilizer.
Last question, and it's a political question. Could there be common ground if listeners are hearing this and thinking, interesting in theory, it'll never, ever get through Congress, certainly if Republicans still control the Senate. But could there be common ground with conservatives on this? Because conservatives are always arguing for work requirements to get government benefits like food stamps. From their point of view, that's a fair social contract, work fair, as it's often called. If you can't find a job, the other taxpayers of America will subsidize your living expenses. But if you're able-bodied, you have to do government work to give back. So are you proposing basically the same social contract, but with the argument flipped on its head, you have a right to have a government job if you can't find work elsewhere, rather than you have an obligation to take one, and then you'll have the money still provided by the taxpayer, and it's the same thing?
Well, as a practical matter, from the point of view of the unemployed person, having a job, whichever way provided, is the same thing. But my program is not punitive. It doesn't take away people's benefits and force them to work. Rather, it is a right and it's an option. Of course, when you tap this option, you don't tap the other benefits. So there are savings that automatically and naturally happen.
But if you have a living wage guarantee for everybody with a federal job, do you need food stamps and Medicaid and other things that go largely to unemployed or people making poverty wages in states that allow poverty wages?
Those expenditures will automatically shrink. That's exactly the design feature of the program, that when we provide the living wage floor and people tap and take this program, then they don't have to use these other benefits. I will not scrap these other benefits. I would allow this market mechanism, if you will, to naturally shrink them. There may be various occasions when somebody might not be able to take the job guarantee and they may still need to rely on the rest of the safety net. But with respect to the politics of this, we have polled the job guarantee program. I mean, jobs are not really a partisan issue. You know, people understand what it means not to have a job or to face the uncertainty of not knowing when that job will arrive. And it polls very well in deep red states. I think that it's making it part of the conversation and understanding that the unemployed, yes, are already in the public sector. They're already the charge of the government. The expenditures and the real and financial costs are very large, and we can simply do better and provide meaningful employment opportunities, fix up all of these communities that are suffering the neglect, and simply have so-called better bang for the buck.
Bard College economics professor Pavlina Cherneva, her new book is The Case for a Job Guarantee. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is obviously also a Daily Coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.